Start the podcast? Okay. Hello, my friends. Here we are again. All right. So I called the service today The Other Side. And I wanted to talk about the season, the sacred holy day of Samhain, and the other side, the realm of our beloved dead. So we'll start with the Samhain in the natural world. The word Samhain actually means summer's end. And, you know, even when we get to Mabon and we know that it's the height of autumn, it's still sometimes we have beautiful warm weather and sunny days. But by the time we get to Samhain, we know pretty much summer is over. So it is indeed summer's end. And on the wheel of the year, we know that that holds the polarity to Beltane. So Beltane is the time of life and fruition and flowering. Well, not quite fruition yet, but life and growth, and it's sensual and sexual and so alive and beautiful. And on the opposite end of the wheel, here approaching Samhain, now is the time of fruition and harvest, and we turn toward the deeper mysteries of death and darkness. Samhain is the threshold to the season of winter, so we know the cross-quarter days on the wheel are actually the beginning of each new season. And so while people in our times will say that Yule is actually the beginning of winter, smart pagans like us, we know that winter actually begins at Samhain. And so it ushers in the darkest eighth of the year, because during these next 6 weeks, or during the 6 weeks from Samhain until Yule, the days are still growing shorter and the nights are still growing longer. So we have the maximum amount of darkness at this particular point in time. Also, what happens now, as we know, is that the energy drops from out there, up and out of growth and flowering. It drops from up and out to in and down. Now all the energy drops all the way down into the earth. And I believe it drops into the earth in a way for safekeeping. It's a time of resting. The earth is sleeping now, and she is resting to restore, because as the cycle turns, it's going to be time for her to use that energy for growth again come spring. And now is the time for rest and reflection. And those of us who follow nature in our spiritual practice, this would be the time for us to do the same. I know I say this every year, you know, as we go into the dark half of the year, we should be less engaged with activity and more restful. There's a reason why the nights are longer now, and maybe we should get to bed a little bit earlier. And now this year, with COVID pretty much hijacking our entire social lives, perhaps this year for the first time we will actually slow down this winter. Maybe there will be less social activity and we'll be more aligned with nature this year than we've ever been. I don't know why we need something like that to happen in order for us to get on board with the wisdom, but there it is. So it is a time, and of course it's so conducive when we have longer nights, when there is less activity and less distraction out there in the world. This is the time that brings the Hallowed evening, that time that is so conducive to that deep reflection. It brings the Hallowed evening, the Holy Sabbath of Samhain.
Now is the time when visions are strong, as the nights grow long. Now is the time when visions are strong, the nights grow long. Let your journey twixt the worlds begin. While the veil is thin, now is the time when visions are strong, as the nights grow long. Now is the time when visions are strong, the nights grow. Let your journey twixt the worlds begin. while the veil is thin. Now is the time when visions are strong, as the nights grow long. Now is the time when visions are strong, the nights grow long. Let your journey twixt the worlds begin, while the veil is thin.
Thank you, Kimberly. It was so beautiful. That was Kimberly Agbayani, and she wrote that beautiful chant and delivers it so lovely for us every year. So I want to talk about Samhain. I want to talk a lot about Samhain, and I want to talk about that veil really as mystery. Because we think of, this is a time when it is said that the veil between the worlds draws thin so that we can more easily connect with our beloved dead on the other side. So just the concept of that veil, I find that so fascinating, really. I love the whole idea that the veil is so thin, and it actually is the demarcation between the world of the living and the world of the dead. The image of the veil really brings up that kind of mystery, because a veil is not a barrier and it's not opaque. We can kind of see through it a little bit, you know? And it brings up that kind of mystery, and it has us thinking about things that are so important that are still unseen or not yet seen. The mystery still lives in the realm of what we don't yet consciously know. We can think we know, we can speculate, but we don't actually know. And so that veil is something that's just kind of gauzy in front of us that we can kind of almost see through, but maybe not really. And it just brings all of these mysteries to mind. It reminds me really very much of the element air, because we know how important air is, and yet we can't see it. That's the element that really reminds us that we don't have to see something in order for it to be real. You know, we can go a long time without food or water, but more than a few minutes without air, game over. So it really talks about how important something is, or how important something can be, that we can't actually see. And so that puts us in the realm and in the mind of these mysteries. So it brings us very present to the veil as the portal between the worlds. It is the place through which we can make that connection. And as we continue on, looking at the other side as that mystery, and the veil being the portal to the other side, I was thinking about this the other day, and it's just the fact, or just by virtue of the fact, that we say there is a veil between the worlds, we are affirming that there is more than one world, and that this world, or this dimension that we live in the third dimension, in these physical bodies, is one place. But if there's a veil between the worlds and our beloved dead are on the other side, then this demarcation is more than just the demarcation. It actually lets us know that there is another side. Or by speaking of it this way, we find we do believe that there is another side. For some of us, we call that other side the Summerland, the place in Avalon, the Isle of Apples, where we grow young again and we have, you know, very few responsibilities. We get to just sit around eating apples, looking at the water, engaging in the mysteries, sleeping, napping, thinking, you know, no tasks. Just, we call it the Summerland, a beautiful place. Wouldn't it be lovely if that were really true, if that's where we go? Of course, we don't know, and we don't know because it's a mystery. One thing we do know, though, is that if we are saying there is another side, whether we call it the Summerland or not, then we are affirming that different realities can coexist at the same time. And we find that even here in the earthly plane. I mean, I think and believe and take actions that are important to me in my reality, and yet there are lots of people who don't think and believe and act like I do. What? I don't know what's the matter with them, but there they are. But one way or another, what it does is that it shows us is that different realities can coexist at the same time. If that can happen here on the earthly plane, why wouldn't it happen in the realm of the ancestors on the other side? So these different realities coexist, and if we continue to follow nature and nature's wisdom, then it would make sense that the cycles of life would continue in those realities. This is why I believe in reincarnation. You don't have to believe in reincarnation. You don't have to believe anything that you don't want to believe. I do believe in reincarnation because it makes sense to me when I look at the natural world. And okay, it's not the same exact dandelion that comes up from that same root, but something in that dandelion sends up another flower after it apparently has died. And we see this over and over again, that once something has come to fruition and has been harvested, or even if it hasn't been harvested, the seeds of what was ever in that plant will be the future of that life to continue onward. So we see the swell and rise of life, and we see the decline, the decay, and the death. And then we see gestation and swell of life, and then we see it. We see it over and over and over again everywhere in our natural world. Why would we as humans be any different? Because we are also part of that natural world. So the physical breaks down, but I believe that the soul is eternal, just like the essence of that dandelion is the same. It's the essence of that particular plant. My soul is the essence of whoever we call Judith in this lifetime is, and I believe that that soul is eternal. I believe it comes back time and time again to have all kinds of experiences for its evolution and its growth. And even if you believe a little bit more on the non-dual way of thinking, the non-duality, which is that everything is just energy, and energy goes into form, and then it goes back into energy, and it's just constantly in a flow, and the flow goes this way, and it goes that way, and everything just comes from whatever it is that came before it. Even if that's the way that you think, it still makes us think, okay, the energy keeps moving on, but what does it move on to? What will happen when we leave our body? What will we find? That, my friends, is the mystery. One thing that I can say with pretty much assuredness is this. I do believe that when we shed our bodies and our souls move on to the afterlife, we also shed our personalities. And I think that happens because we form our personalities when we come here. I believe the personalities that we form is in response to our environment, to the external world. And then we form a personality, and then we come to identify with that personality, and then we live our lives as if we are that personality. So like, for example, let's say we were born into a family or a situation where we were terribly abused, and we had to learn to fight for ourselves or to hide or to run. We might become a very defensive person. Our first impulse might be to defend ourselves, no matter what's going on, because that's what we learn. That becomes part of our personality because it was in response to some stimulus early on when we were forming who we were. On the other end of that spectrum, we can say, what if we came in with a silver spoon in our mouth and we had everything done for us, never had to work hard or make any sort of effort? Well, we might end up becoming a rather narcissistic person who's an elitist. In response, that is a personality that is formed by what we encounter here in the third dimension in the earthly plane. But I believe when our souls leave the cage of our bodies and off we go, then we also drop our personalities and we go back to the essence of soul and spirit, which I think in many ways is very wise and also very neutral. Doesn't have to comply with anything. It doesn't have to try to please anybody or get along. I think the personality is what we develop in part as a coping mechanism and a survival tactic here in the third dimension. Now, the reason why I'm bringing all of this up is because as we approach Samhain, and if we want to be connecting with our beloved dead on the other side, sometimes the beloved dead were not all that nice to us when they were here. We didn't have that good of a relationship. And so why would we want to connect with them on the other side? You know, we might be relieved that they're gone or that we no longer have to grapple with whatever took place in that relationship. But if you consider that whoever that person was here, and however they interacted with you, was in part coming from their personality, which is what they had to form in order to survive here, if that's gone and they've gone back to pure spirit, you would have a different relationship with them now that they are among your beloved dead. And I think that's really good to consider, especially if it's someone that you did not have a good experience with in this lifetime, because there can be immense amounts of healing can happen now that they're no longer in that personality. So this is just something to consider. And I think that is a good idea. The personality is temporal, like the body, and I think we shed them both when we die. So we can't reflect on those who have gone before us without somehow reflecting on our own mortality. And I think this is one of the gifts of Samhain. There are so many gifts of Samhain to honor our beloved dead and feel that deep spiritual connection again. But I think this time of the year also affords us the gift of deep reflection on our own mortality. And I think that the more we do that, gently, safely, not to become morbid, not to dwell in grief or sorrow, not to bring us into a depressed state, but because it is a great mystery that we are going to encounter. And, you know, our culture mostly does not want to think about death, that we want to avoid death at all costs. And we certainly don't prepare ourselves, or many of us do not prepare ourselves, nor our families and our children, for this great mystery. And so when someone comes around on the wheel, this is a time for us to be thinking about it. Oh yeah, there's going to come a time when I meet my death. I'm not ready for it right now. But there will come a time, ready or not, it's going to happen. And so turning toward that and recognizing and contemplating and reflecting on our own mortality in many ways is preparing us for that great mystery, for whenever it arrives. So this is one of my, if not perhaps my all-time favorite story that I've ever heard, ever anywhere. And I found it in the book called The Astrology of Fate by Liz Green years ago, like in the early 90s I got this book. And she starts the book with this story, which takes place centuries ago, where there is a young man who works for a wealthy merchant. And his job on this one particular day is to get on his horse and ride many miles into a great big marketplace. And he has a purse filled with coins from his employer. And he is charged to go and buy fruit and meat and wine at the marketplace. And it's a beautiful day, and he gets up on his horse, and he's got the money with him, and he has a lovely couple of hours riding to the marketplace. And when he arrives, he slows his horse, and he looks around at all. It's like a festival. There's stalls and color and liveliness and so many people talking and laughing. A whole scene is going on here. And then when he turns and he looks down the center aisle, at the end of that center aisle is the Grim Reaper, and death is looking right at him. Of course, this terrifies him. And so he backs the horse up and he turns tail and he runs off at a gallop. He has that horse galloping as hard and as fast as it can. And they ride and they run and they ride and they run for hours. He is merciless on that horse, running, terrified, scared to death, as fast as he can go. And they ride and ride all day long. And when evening comes, they finally come to this tiny little town up in the mountains. And he uses some of the coins from his employer and he procures himself a room for the night. He puts the horse in the stable. He climbs up into his room. He gets into the bed. He pulls the covers up under his chin. And finally, for the first time since he saw death, takes a deep breath that is filled with in part exhaustion and in part relief. And when he opens his eyes at the foot of the bed, standing there is death. And he says to him, "How did you find me? What are you doing here?" And death says to him, "Well, I've come to collect you. I saw you in the market earlier today, and I tried to tell you we had an appointment here tonight, but you ran before I could tell you. I love that story. There's so much in that story. I just love that story so much. So here are the points I want to bring out about that story. First of all, it brings out our presence about this mystery that we will encounter. It brings out that when it is our time, it is going to be our time. And there is nothing we can do. Even when we're warned, oh my goodness, he sees the Grim Reaper. I'm out of here. We cannot outrun death. And then the whole fatalistic aspect of it, which is that he sees him, he runs away, he runs and runs and runs till he feels he gets to a place of safety, and then as soon as he relaxes, there's death again, and he says, wait a minute, I ran like crazy from you, how did you get here, what are you doing here, how did you find me? And death doesn't say, well, I'm death and I know everything, so I can find you no matter where you are. Death says, no, I saw you earlier, and I wanted to tell you that we had an appointment here tonight, but you left before I could tell you. So it just makes us think, huh, now what would have happened if he said, hey, Grim Reaper, there in the marketplace, got a message for me? Would he have gone to that particular town? Would he have met him later, or wouldn't he have? So it's this element of fate. And really, that all comes down to this. Death as the great mystery, as one great mystery, is inevitable. No one gets to escape it. But what we can do is prepare for it. Now, we might ask, how do we prepare for something that is unknown? Actually, I realized by looking at my notes, good for me, that I jumped ahead to another point. I want to go back and make one more point, which is this. Every death is perfect. Every death is perfect. We might say, we might feel, we might believe that a death shouldn't have happened. It happened too soon. It shouldn't have happened like that. She died too early. He wasn't ready. It was too painful. It should have been like this. Why couldn't it have waited until that? We cause so much more suffering for ourselves by believing, hanging on somehow to the thought and idea that we could control this great mystery, and that if only we had had our say and we would have done it differently, it would have been better. When we turn toward the fact that every death is perfect, we can ease a lot of our own suffering around death. That is a very hard concept to wrap around, but I invite you to try to do it. Because even for what we consider untimely deaths, or deaths that are too painful, or deaths that were, you know, all the reason why we don't like death and we don't want to lose those we love. Because it is a mystery, because it is inevitable, because there is this fate to it, and also because if when we are on the other side and we are reviewing our lives that we have lived, and we are choosing our lives for when we come back, part of that choice is what the death will be as well. We choose when we come back in. We choose who our family is going to be. We choose the lessons that we need to learn, things that we need to master, and we choose how we're going to go out. Now that portal, that veil between the worlds, I believe is both the birth canal when we come into this life, and whatever that portal is that we're going to go through when we leave this life. Now, when we are born, our brains are not yet developed enough to have memories. So we don't remember actually coming through the birth canal. But we don't know. That could have been extremely painful. We know it's extremely painful for the mother. It might be extremely painful and stressful for the fetus coming through too, all of a sudden to be pushed out of where it was warm and safe and taken care of, right? Wow, that could be a very traumatic experience, but we don't remember. It's like that veil provides forgetfulness. And I think that happens on the other side too. We might be conscious at the moment of our death, but then we get to the other side and we don't have a memory of it. And then we choose what we're going to need when we come back next time around. That's what I believe happens. That's what makes sense to me. So, every death is perfect. Some of them are peaceful, some are difficult, some are painful, but all are perfect because the soul chooses it before we get here. And then we come through the veil of forgetfulness and we don't remember what it's supposed to be. So that when it happens, we say, oh, something was wrong here. It shouldn't have happened. When we turn toward this great mystery, even though it's an unknown, we prepare ourselves in some way to meet our death and hopefully to meet our death beautifully, because it's going to happen one way or another. Why wouldn't we want to do it beautifully? So that begs the question, how do we prepare for the unknown if we don't know what we're going to need when we get there? How do we know what to prepare so that we have what we need when we get there? Well, we just probably won't. But we can ask ourselves, how do we want to meet our death? And since we can't know what that's going to be, or very few of us know, the best way is to ask ourselves, what will we accomplish while we're here? Because if we feel good about that, we will probably have an easier time when it's time to go. There will be less regret when we go to the other side. We can ask ourselves, what will we leave behind when we go? What kind of influence do we want to put forth now so that those coming after us can benefit from that once we are gone? These are the questions that we can ask ourselves that help us prepare for that great mystery and the unknown. Now, whether that is the unknown about death, how we're going to die, when we're going to die, all of that, or it's just, you know, about life during COVID, right? We're in the land of unknown right now. There's been so much unknown for months now, and we don't even know how many more months it's going to be. So, but I think it's the same mechanism. We can't know, I mean, we do know what we can't do, but what can we do? We can't know when we're going to die. We cannot know when this virus is going to be, none of us know those answers. So we have to turn toward, what is it that we do know? What is it that we can do? And then put our effort there. That, I believe, is the way to prepare for the unknown. That's how we prepare for the unknown, by doing what we can while we are here, by doing all the things that we think we can, that we believe we ought to, while we are able, so that when we meet that moment of death, we can feel like we did our best. That's how we prepare. So if you would, take a moment now, close your eyes and go within. Take a nice deep breath once more. Reconnect to your grounding cord that we sent down at the beginning of the service. And if you came in after we created sacred space, go ahead and ground yourself now. Find yourself deeply rooted to our Mother Earth. Bring your attention up to your third eye in the center of your forehead. Imagine it like an actual eye, just like your other two. And then go ahead and open it up and look out through it into your imagination. And find yourself walking safely out in nature, just after the sun has completely set. The sky is deep black now, the stars are bright. The moon is on the wane, and the wind has picked up, blowing dried leaves off the trees that swirl in the air on this cool evening in deep autumn, on the threshold to winter. But you are wrapped in all your cozy clothing, so you remain warm and comfortable, which makes this walk even more pleasurable. It feels good to be out here, immersed in this particular beauty of this mysterious season. The time of Samhain approaches, and just as that thought crosses your mind, a diffuse light glowing up ahead catches your eye and your curiosity. Walk toward it. Now, you would think that the closer you get to it, the brighter it would become, or whatever is glowing would reveal itself to you in more clarity. But that's not the case. You are nearing this glow now, but the quality of it doesn't change one little bit. It's a warm glow, a light emanating, but from a source that you can't locate. And now you come to stand right in front of it. You can almost see through it. It looks as if something is going on within it, but it's all kind of blurry. No, that's not it. It's not blurry, but it's so pale, it's translucent. Light, but not form. Movement, but not distinct. And then it hits you. This is the veil. You have come to the veil between the worlds of the living and your beloved dead. The veil that's been thinning since the autumn equinox almost 3 weeks ago. This is the veil you will go through when you leave this life. The veil through which you hope to send and receive a message when Samhain arrives. Because you're not ready to go through this veil just yet. It's not yet your time. And so to make sure of this, turn your back to the veil now and look back the way that you have come. And you are surprised to find yourself looking back on this life, your life now, looking back at this life that you have lived so far. And you're looking at it in a very big picture kind of way, the big swaths of action and the trajectory that your life has taken. Now, with your back to the veil, look and see what you have accomplished so far and are proud of. Look for that now. Good, and now look and see what is unfinished and needs your attention. Something that still remains to be done, so that when it is your time to go through the veil, your soul will be satisfied. Take a moment to contemplate what that unfinished thing is. And it may be something tangible on your bucket list, you know, like seeing the pyramids in Egypt. Or it may be something more ephemeral, like learning to forgive or allowing yourself to love without limit. What is that unfinished thing or lesson or experience that your soul wants to feel complete about before it's time to pass back through this veil behind you? Think about that now. Good. Now, what you might have come up with that still needs to be done might be something really big for you, and maybe that's why it hasn't been done yet. But even big things, huge leaps, significant shifts, need a strategy, and that strategy can start by breaking it down into smaller steps. So think of it now. What small step can you take toward this unaccomplished thing? Resolve to take that one to satisfy your soul while you are still here. Now, maybe it's forgiveness. So maybe forgiving the one who hurt you the most is not that first step. Maybe you practice, you know, forgiving the barista for making your coffee wrong or something like that. And take a moment now and think of the one step you can take, some small thing, and resolve to do it so that when it is your time to go back through the veil to the realm of your ancestors, you know that you have made the effort to do the work of your soul while you were here. Find that one step and resolve to do that now. Good. Now, turn toward the veil once more. Turn around and turn toward that veil. The glow is beautiful, and somehow it's comforting. Now, there is a pocket in the coat that you are wearing. Reach into it now and find the small object that you brought with you to leave as an offering here. Maybe it's a small stone or a crystal or a dried flower petal or a coin. It doesn't matter really what it is. It's a token of your love and gratitude. And leave it on the ground here by this glowing veil, an offering. And then take a deep breath once more And let the image of all of this fade and gently bring yourself back to present time here with me in Gaia's temple. And when you feel ready, open your eyes again. You know, I might not accomplish everything that my soul came here for in this lifetime, but when I reach the death of my body, I want to know that I did everything in my power to try to do so. I want to know that soul satisfaction. So the next thing I want to talk about, really just to kind of start to wrap this whole thing up, are ways to interact with the other side. Ways to interact with that mystery on the other side. So most of us here are pagan or pagan friendly. We are used to creating altars. And of course, that's the first thing you can do is create an altar for your beloved dead. Some of us never take them down. But if you do, this is the time to start a new one at this time. So you create any sort of table, any sort of flat surface, and you put some kind of cloth on it. You put your photos or remembrances of your beloved dead on there. Definitely a candle, maybe some bells or chimes or anything that speaks to you of the season. So by creating an altar, we have sort of a spiritual focus for our ancestors. And that's one beautiful way to honor them. The other is to really indulge your memories now. And I think that indulging the memories should happen in all kinds of different ways. So you can ask yourself, like, what is my favorite memory of that person on the other side? And then really think about it. Bring all the details in. What were they wearing? What was I wearing? Where were we? What was happening? What was so funny about it, or so loving, or so beautiful? And then you can ask yourself, what's my least favorite memory about that person? You know, or what's the thing I miss about the most? Or what is the thing I'm relieved I don't have to deal with? It doesn't have to all be hearts and flowers and wonderful things, but just by indulging your memories, it is evocative of the season, and you bring your ancestors closer to you by remembering them. So indulge your memories is another way. Contemplate your lineage. Now, if possible, you know, if you know where your people are from, but if you don't know, let's say you were adopted and you have no idea what your blood lineage is, you can also just imagine, like, what are the strong traits about who you are? You know, like some people are just innately good at this and it's good at that, and kind of comes down the family line. So even though we don't necessarily know the details of our family line, we can contemplate, what is the lineage that I am engaged in? That's another way to honor our ancestors. Another big one is around food. You can make food that's in your family lineage or from your, you know, your grandmother's cookies and your, you know, any of the family recipes, or recipes from a particular country where your ancestors were from. And making those recipes, thinking about them while you cook, this is a beautiful tradition and a beautiful way to honor your ancestors as well. Any of those family of origin traditions for the continuity of legacy, you know. When I was a little kid, we used to, you know, I'm going to do that again, or I'm going to do that for my kids, or some sort of continuity. That's another way to honor that legacy. And also to contemplate your own legacy. When I'm gone, what do I want to leave behind me? This is part of contemplating immortality, but it's also a beautiful way to stay with the thrust of what we are focusing on in season. And of course, ritual. Do a ritual for your ancestors. Create sacred space. Invite them in. Talk with them. If you speak English now, but you come from a different mother tongue, utilize that mother tongue. If there was a phrase that your ancestors always used, speak it to them in ritual. Consult an oracle at this time. Ask for messages. Ask for dreams. Write down what comes to you. All of these are ways to engage with your ancestors on the other side. And they're beautiful things to do at this time now. So, so beautiful. You know, it's not like our ancestors disappear after Samhain. They're there all the time. But it's just that at this time when the veil draws thin, it is easier. And the whole world is sort of, you know, turning toward this now. So we might as well jump in and engage with it ourselves. If we believe in the afterlife, then we ought to trust that they are there. somewhere doing their afterlife thing, you know? And when we think of them in spirit, we know they are free from this dimension and the cage of our bones, and we can think of them as free. There's a freedom there. We may no longer be able to see them with our usual eyes or touch them with our hands, but we can feel them. We can sense them. We can feel them through the veil. And what a blessing that is.
To the summer land, no longer mine. Now you belong to eternity. Smile down on me. Blessed be, blessed be. I feel your love bathing me. Blessed be, blessed be. I hear your voice call to me. Summerland, no longer mine. Now you belong to eternity. Smile down on me. Blessed be, I feel your love bathing me. Blessed be, I hear your voice praying. Blessed be.
Thank you, Annie. That was beautiful. And Silverman, that was her song. Thank you so much. So, my friends, may you turn toward this mystery gently and in safety this season. May your beloved dead, who now belong to time, bless you through the veil. May you find the time and make the effort to reach between the worlds to bless your ancestors. May this enhance your relationship with spirit. May the night when the veil is thinnest bring deep wisdom to you from the other side. and may your memories flood you with love. Blessed be. So this is the time when we open our floor for our community prayers. So I want to say a little something about this. You know, I've been thinking about this because with all the technology and all the madness of figuring out how to do this well, not everyone wants their prayers to be public. And while we are on a Zoom call, it is being live streamed to YouTube, which means that anybody can watch it. So there's two things that we think can work for this. One is we'll open the floor for anyone who wants to offer up their prayer. There's a feature where you can raise your hand. I think it's on the bottom of your little screen there. You can raise your hand, and then Mari, who's hosting us, will bring you up, and one by one you can say offer your prayers. Finish with blessed be. That's when we know you're finished, and then we'll go on to the next person. Then we're going to hold a moment of silence for those of us who want to still pray, but maybe not make them verbal. Another way to do that, if you don't want them to be broadcast to on the YouTube channel, is to put your prayer in the chat room, and then all of us can read and say our own sort of silent blessed be that way. So, Mari, I'm going to let you take it now, and let's open up the floor for our community prayers.
All right, so yeah, at the bottom of the participant screen, you'll see a raise hand button. And so if you... Oh, okay, here we go. Karina.
Hi, everyone. So I want to say a prayer to my team. I'm a manager at Seattle Children's, and we are ending the end of our journey for my team, and we are now close to the part where we're going to be transitioning for my team so that they could start their new career journey somewhere else. And so at this time, I just want to send prayers to them that they enter this transition with courage and love from all of us, and that they have the support that they need in order to continue in that journey in whatever way that they need to at this time. And I'm just sending them such love and gratitude for being a really great team to lead, and that I know that these next several weeks are going to be tough, but that I'm holding them all in my heart as we near the end. Blessed be.
Blessed be.
And then Steph has a prayer. Sorry.
Thank you. And I have a prayer of blessing, gratitude, and honoring of my father, Stephen Frenzel, who crossed the veil a little over a week ago and gave me and my family a beautiful opportunity for healing and for building connection and supporting each other. And so I just want to give a blessing for my father's spirit and his soul, for it wherever it may he be in peace. And for my stepmother, Nicole, who is still here, may she find peace as she continues to grieve. Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Blessed be.
All right, and then we have, I don't know how to pronounce, Mansur and Eve.
Mm-hmm. You have to unmute yourselves.
I'd like to ask for a prayer for my younger sister in her transition through cancer. It's moving a little faster than they thought it would. So I don't expect it in the next couple of months, but I don't expect her to live a year either. So I'm asking for a peaceful transition for her. Blessed be.
Blessed be.
I don't see any other hands raised.
Anyone else have any other verbal prayers they'd like to make? All right, let's hold a moment of silence then, and we can all say our prayers in our hearts as we need to. May all our prayers, spoken and unspoken, be heard and answered. Blessed be.
Blessed be.
All right, so here we go.
Hi, everyone. My name is Karina Frenzel, and I am the board president for Gaius Temple. And I am so happy that we just celebrated our 20 years of our beloved ministry, especially since Gaius Temple speaks for the earth and for nature, and that voice has never been more important than right now. Gaius Temple is a spiritual entity, of course, but she does exist in the material plane and as such needs your financial support. At this time in the service, if we were gathering in person, we would pass the love offering baskets now and ask for your donations to keep Gaius Temple going. But we can't pass the baskets virtually, so instead I ask you to go to the donate button on Gaius Temple's website, gaiustemple.org, and give as generously as you can. We'd be most grateful. Also, Gaius Temple tithes 10% of the donations made to us on the day of our services to other nonprofit organizations that are in alignment with our mission, vision, and goals. Today, we will tithe to the Rainforest Action Network, which campaigns for the forests, their inhabitants, and the natural systems that sustain life by transforming the global marketplace through education, grassroots organization, and nonviolent direct action. Know that 10% of what you donate today will go towards supporting the preservation of the rainforests, the lungs of Gaia. Thank you in advance for your generous donations. So at this time, we always sing as the baskets are passed. So I will lead us in singing our song five times through that we usually use at this part of the service. So please feel free to join in, but again, keep your mute buttons on so that we don't have the lag. And here we go.
Thank you, Mother Earth, for your gifts of love today. Thank you, Mother Earth, we are following your way. Thank you, Mother Earth, for your gifts of love today. Thank you, Mother Earth, we are following your way. Thank you, Mother Earth, for your gifts of love today. Thank you, Mother Earth, we are following your way. Thank you, Mother Earth, for your gifts of love today. Thank you, Mother Earth, we are following your way. Thank you, Mother Earth, for your gifts of love today. Thank you, Mother Earth, we are following your way.
Oh, I don't have my digger, so ding!
I'll do it. Time. Thank you, Karina. Thank you, everyone, so much. So a few announcements, quick little announcements. The first one, of course, is that we hope you join us for our virtual Samhain ritual. We usually have our beautiful spiral dance. Of all the years not to be able to meet, this is falls right on a Saturday. It's a blue moon. I mean, oh, my goodness. But we can't meet in person. But you know that blue moon magic, it's going to be powerful no matter what. And we are preparing a beautiful ritual for you. So please join us. It's going to be over Zoom. We did a lot of talking about how we want to do the Sabbats now during the time of COVID. And we decided that we're going to be doing our Sabbats over Zoom only, not live streaming them to YouTube, which means that you must register in order to get the Zoom link. So there's two ways to register. One is to just go to the Gaius Temple website, go to PayPal, you know, donate something and put in the notes, Samhain ritual. And then we'll know, we'll have a record and we'll be able to send you that Zoom invite. or you can go to the events page and click on the registration right there, and it will automatically send me a message that you have registered. But if we don't know that you have registered, then I can't send you the Zoom link, and then you can't participate. So please make sure to do that. And I will check and check and check again. And then just before the ceremony, I will check my email. So if for some reason I didn't get it, or you don't have the Zoom link by like a quarter of or 6:30 on that night, let's say, because it starts at 7, then email me and I'll check my email again and make sure that you get it. And this way, hopefully, we'll include everyone. It's going to be a beautiful ritual, I think, and I hope you join us. So please do. That was the first thing. The second thing is, you know, we also decided that we're going to be selling our wreaths again this year. We're going to just do it once. Usually we sell holiday wreaths at the November and the December service. Instead, we're going to be making and selling our wreaths on November 22nd, which is the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And since we're not meeting at the church, we'll be selling them out of the parking lot by my Green Lake office. So if you haven't already signed on to the Guy's Temple newsletter list, you can do that on the Guy's Temple website, and then you'll get all the information and be able to place your orders in plenty enough time. And then with a mask on, you can meet me in the parking lot, and I'll sell you the wreaths there. So we will be doing that. It's such a beautiful thing that we love to do. It's an important fundraiser for the ministry. And, you know, we need to celebrate any way we can and be as festive as we can for the holidays, albeit they'll be very different this year. And of course, the last thing that I want to make sure that I say is that I really hope and pray that every one of you who is an American citizen is going to vote in this election. It is so important, perhaps more important now, that everyone cast the vote. The other thing that I want to say about that is I know, like I said, all kinds of realities coexist, right? People believe all kinds of things everywhere. What I'd like to suggest and what I'd like to request is that we look long-term, bigger eyes, bigger vision. We might not be able to get exactly what we want, the candidate that we would have preferred, the new system that we hope will come into play right here, right now. Sometimes there are times when we have to mitigate the damage and stop the bleeding, you know, before we can actually create the health that we want. I believe this is one of those times. So I ask you, I beg you, and I pray that you vote and vote early and do it now. Blessed be. Those were my announcements. All right. So we have lots of thanks to offer today. As always, I want to thank Mari Budlong for hosting us and handling all the technological madness. Mari, I love you already. And to our beautiful talent today, Nedra Gaskill, for calling in the directions. We're going to go to her in a moment while she releases them. Kimberly Agbayani for her beautiful chant. Annie Silverman for that gorgeous song, Fly Free. Thank you all so much. Music is so much a part of this service, and I am so grateful to everyone who offers it up so beautifully. Thank you, thank you. Thank you so much. And I also want to thank all the board of directors of Guy's Temple for all you do to keep this ministry healthy. I'm so grateful to you. Thank you so much. And to each and every one of you who donate and keep us going, you have my eternal gratitude. So before we release the directions, I have this final thought that I would like to offer here. And this final thought was written by the Indian mystic Rajneesh, who said, "The question is not whether life exists after death. The real question is, are you alive before death?" Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Nedra, if you'll sing out the directions. Thank you.
To the spirits of the earth and the power that reside in the north, we sing, go if you must, stay if you will. Within or without, we remain with you still. To the spirits of the water and the powers that reside in the west, we sing, go if you must, stay if you will. Within or without, we remain with you still. To the spirits of the fire and the powers that reside in the south, we sing, Go if you must, stay if you will, within or without, we remain with you still. To the spirits of the air and the powers that reside in the east, we sing, go if you must, stay if you will, within or without, we remain with you still. And to the spirits of the center, we sing, go if you must, stay if you will, within or without, we remain with you still.
Thank you, Nedra. That was beautiful. All right, my friends. So I hope that you will stay with us for some fellowship after this is over. We're going to sing our final song, The Circle is Open and Unbroken. And then we're just going to open up all the unmutes and we'll spend a few minutes chatting and sharing some fellowship together. So here we go. But I will ask you to stay muted one last time. I'll lead this last song as we sing. The circle is open and unbroken. May the love of the goddess go in our hearts. Merry meet and merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be, blessed be, blessed be. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you. Blessed be. Hello, this is Reverend Judith Laxer. Thank you for listening to the podcast of our service entitled The Other Side. I hope that you enjoyed it, and my wish is that it offered food for thought that will nourish your soul. The Gaia's Temple Ministry is sustained by generous donations such as yours, and we need your financial support. If everyone donated just $3 each time they listen and receive a service, that reciprocity would ensure our continuance. If you feel served by listening and wish to donate to help support our ministry, please push the donate button now and give generously. We'd be most grateful. Thank you, and blessed be.